And welcome to Dakota Midday. I'm Kara Hetland at the Sioux Falls Studios, and I'm filling in today for Carl Gerke. Thanks so much for joining us today. We're going to spend the first part of the program talking about petitions and petition signatures and the latest with Dr. Annette Bosworth. So I have two guests with me today. First of all, Secretary of State Jason Gant is here in the studio with me. Secretary, thank you for being here.
It's good to be here. Thank you.
Thanks. And David Montgomery, the political reporter with the Sioux Falls Argus Leader, is also joining the conversation. David, thanks for coming back.
I couldn't stay away.
We're happy to have you. So let's start first with David. Any updates for us? As we've played Dr. Bosworth's statement, but anything to add?
Not as far as I've been able to determine. The big thing that is still waiting is Clayton Walker. His indictment was issued yesterday, and as of yesterday evening, he had yet to be taken into custody. Officials are giving him a chance to turn himself in, as Bosworth did. She walked up to the courthouse, was processed, and released a few minutes later. Walker is being given a chance to do that, and if he doesn't turn himself in, they're going to law enforcement is going to go out and arrest him.
Well, we tried to get a hold of him, and he was in North Dakota.
Interesting.
Mm-hmm. So that's what we were told anyway, and it was news to them that. That there was an arrest warrant. So, okay, so this all moves forward, and initial appearance for Dr. Bosworth is on June 23rd, correct?
They're hoping to have the initial appearance for Walker then as well, if they get him in time to schedule that.
And this is in Hughes County because?
Because that's where Secretary of State Ganta lives and works.
Nice transition, David. So we'll come here and talk with Secretary Gant. So I know that you can't talk about this now because it is a legal matter, but let's back up and talk about the petition process. What happens? What's required? Those kinds of things.
Absolutely. For an individual who wants to run for either the Republican ticket or the Democratic ticket, their petitions were due the end of March. And once they were able to submit their petitions by that deadline, then my office goes through and makes sure that the petitions are complete. Now, by complete, that means that each line is filled out correctly. It makes sure that they have the minimum number of signatures required. Now, one thing that state law does not allow is for the Secretary of State to verify voter registration or information like that. So we are just, our responsibility is to make sure that the petitions are complete. And that's what we did for Ms. Bosworth back on, it would have been the end of March, first part of April.
Okay, when you say complete, what...
Sure. If, we've all probably signed a petition and, you have to sign your name, you have to write your name, your address, your city, your county, and the date. Sometimes the date is missing. Sometimes the county is missing. If there's a blank line within that petition signature line, then we're not allowed to count it. So that's when I say complete. That's what I mean is that line has to be complete. If it's not, we check it off as not valid.
So it's not your job to make sure it's all accurate.
Oh, absolutely not. State law doesn't allow the secretary to go through that. The process for candidates is much, much different than the process for a ballot question. When we receive initiated measures for the ballot, state law requires the Secretary of State to do a 5% random sample. Now, in that 5% random sample, which will include a couple thousand signature lines, then we verify that they're a registered voter, we verify that the information is accurate, and go through those steps. But for candidates, state law doesn't allow that.
Why?
What the legislature has put in place, and that's the process that that we've gone through for many, many years, probably decades. But if you think about the amount of time that it would take to go through and verify, and for candidates, you might, if you're looking at changing the law, you might want to go more than 5% random sample. But in those cases, it's going to take even longer for the Secretary of State's office to complete that activity. So then you go back to the issue of, what about the timeline? Because we had to have ballots in the auditor's office 48 days before the June primary. So that was somewhere around the 15th of April, if I remember right. So the time is very tight right there. And to go through Well, we had, at the time, 9 different candidates for statewide office, and that's thousands and thousands of petitions. So we would definitely need to have authorization from the legislature to spend a great deal of money on additional staff and verification to go through that entire process. It's all doable, but right now state law doesn't allow it.
Okay, so you have to... Any interested party then can question a petition.
That's right. Once the Secretary of State makes a determination that an individual was successful, then their name gets put on the ballot. Now, within 5 days of the Secretary of State determining that this individual is on the ballot, any interested person can challenge that decision. Now, what the process is once a candidate's petitions are challenged is that individual, that interested party, has to prove that this line is not a registered voter. This line should not be counted. This line should not be counted. And then give their reasons. And that's what we had with both Bosworth's petitions, with Walker's petitions, and with Larry Roden's petitions.
Okay. And so now walk me through the differences then between the three candidates.
Sure. With Bosworth's petitions, once I approved them, within 5 days we received a challenge. We then went through that challenge and determined that even though some of her signature lines were, additional lines were thrown out, she still met the minimum requirement of the 3,100 and some signature lines that were required. Or 2,000, I forget now the number, but she had enough signatures.
Okay.
So the challenge was unsuccessful. So her name was put on the ballot. Well, when we were going through that additional review and reviewing the challenge, there were a number of issues that were brought up in the challenge. And as Secretary of State, I don't have a badge, I don't have a gun, we don't have any law enforcement authority. So when we saw those irregularities, we then forwarded that information to the Attorney General's office.
So it was, she had enough to be on the ballot.
Yep, she had enough to be on the ballot.
Okay.
So everything was good to go there, except there were what we believe some irregularities, and we turned that over to law enforcement for them to investigate and determine whether or not there was any issues.
Okay, Clayton Walker now.
Clayton Walker, different story. His petitions came in, and upon completeness, he was successful in having enough signatures to be on the ballot. However, there was a challenge to his petitions as well. So same process, I put them both on the ballot. Bosworth was challenged. She still had enough signatures, so her name stayed on the ballot. On Walker, he had enough signatures, but after the challenge, he was well below the minimum number to get on the ballot. So that's why his name was removed from the general election ballot. Because remember, he was running as an independent,
right.
And independents aren't on the primary election ballot. So that's why his name was taken off the ballot and Bosworth's name was left on the ballot.
Okay, and Larry Roden, how does...
Yep, Larry Roden, his petitions were challenged back in late February, early March, and that challenge was also unsuccessful, so his name continued to stay on the ballot.
Okay.
But when we went through his challenge, we didn't notice anything that looked suspicious to where we needed to turn it over to the Attorney General's office.
And David, just go ahead and jump in if you have questions or if you have comments.
Sure. So I'm just to clarify, if someone files a challenge, that then opens you up to be able to look into more things than you could on your own just reviewing it. You couldn't have caught Clayton Walker, even if you noticed suspicious things in Clayton Walker's petitions in your look-through, you couldn't have done anything about it unless someone filed a challenge?
That's absolutely right. State law doesn't allow us to go into that type of investigation. State law only says the Secretary of State may verify completeness. So he had enough lines that had the correct data in there, which made him successful to have over the minimum number of signatures to be on the ballot.
So you didn't look at the names and the addresses? And those
We're not
kinds.
Allowed to.
You're not allowed to?
No. And you can't treat those candidates differently. It's completeness. It's once they hit that minimum, we then stop counting and put their name on the ballot. State law really puts all the responsibility to, as state law says, an interested party to go through and try and challenge any of those signature lines.
So you, though, have to open up The petitions to anybody who wants to look at them?
Oh, absolutely. They are available to the public. We have to charge for copies, but if you don't want to pay for the copies, you can come into the office and sit at a desk, and we'll let you comb through the petitions. but the biggest thing to remember is that the Secretary of State can only verify completeness. We can't go through and determine voter registration and that type of stuff on the initial determination. But once there's a challenge, then we do. We go through everything. It's line by line. It's looking at their voter registration. It's making sure that they are a registered voter. Some cases we're verifying with the county auditors to get voter registration forms. Lots of information then takes place on the challenge side.
Okay. David, do you have anything else?
Not on this immediate subject.
Okay. Okay. Let's move on a little bit and talk about the primary election, voter turnout.
Yeah, voter turnout. Oh, it was very sad. just over 20%, I think, was the unofficial number on election night. Of course, right now, all the county auditors are conducting their county canvass, which will take place up until Monday at 5 p.m. And then on Tuesday, we'll have the statewide canvass. And then that will be the time when the election is considered final. And then if there's any recounts or anything, that can begin after the statewide canvass.
Okay. Now, is it your job? Go ahead, David.
How much is the voter turnout lowered by the fact that now independents are being considered in the denominator for the Democratic primary election? Does that lower the percentage compared to the way things would have looked in, say, 2008?
Well, that's something very interesting to look at, because independents do have the option. They can either vote on the Democratic ballot, they can vote on just a nonpartisan ballot if one's available, or they can choose just not to vote. And probably by mid to late summer, we will be able to issue a report on how many Democrats voted in the election and how many independents voted on the Democrat ballot and how many independents voted just on the nonpartisan. So once we get that data back from the counties, we should have a little more information about whether or not this is making our voter turnout look lower than it is. But with the Republicans, we can definitely see it, where I think it was 30-some percent, if memory serves. So you're seeing, even at a 30% turnout or 35%, that's still way too low. We need to encourage people to get out there and cast their ballots.
And is that the Secretary of State's role to push voter turnout?
I believe the Secretary of State's role is to provide as many resources and tools possible for the public. That's why we've had online, where you can look up your voter registration status, you can see your sample ballot online, you can find your polling place online. We've even expanded that to where we've created a mobile app for your smartphone, where you can get turn-by-turn directions to your polling place. You can even see your sample ballot on your phone, so if you're waiting in line to vote, you could be already preparing for how you're going to vote once you get into the voting booth. So, you know, I think the Secretary of State is responsible to provide those tools, but I can't go out there and pull people by the arm and say, you got to go vote, you got to go vote. In our country, we have the right to vote, and we also have the right not to vote.
Okay. How about election laws? Do you see anything? Is there anything that you're going to recommend that needs to be changed, tweaked a little?
Every election, we're always trying to analyze what worked, what didn't work, what laws were confusing, or what we could do to make things better. In some precincts, as an example, we need to have either two Republicans and one Democrat as poll workers, or we need two Democrats and one Republican. In some cases, auditors are having trouble finding enough registered Democrats or enough registered Republicans in particular areas. So there's been some talk about, well, maybe we should change that to allow an independent or something to sit there as a poll worker. So there's some of those issues, but we're always open for ideas. You know, we've done a lot of changes in the last 4 years since I've been secretary, and I'm sure there's going to continue to be more and more ideas in the future.
Do you think the time span from petitions to when the ballot needs to be to the auditor, do you think that needs to be tweaked?
Well, I think we do need to look at that process. We do have some constraints from the federal government where absentee voting has to begin for our military personnel, our military and overseas folks, 46 days before the election. So that date is kind of set in stone. And then you have to look back to, well, when do you want the petition deadline to be? Do you want it to continue to be in the end of March? Do you want to move it to the end of February? When do you want to move it? Obviously, if you move that up, then you're looking at starting in December. So depending on what the legislature feels they need to do to resolve this issue, they sure can. There's a lot of ideas that I think the legislature is going to probably look at during the next legislative session.
But nothing you're going to take directly from your office to the lawmaker?
We have a list of some ideas already from this election. Okay. We have a list of ideas from the big city and school elections we had back in April. And we're going to continue looking at those. And then after the general election, we'll see if anything else has come up. And then, yeah, we'll probably have a few pieces of legislation.
And you'll put your package together.
Yes. Yes.
All right. Well,
one thing that we've noticed in Minnehaha County that's been an issue is the question of absentee ballots and when they can be counted. Apparently, some counties have been tabulating the absentee ballots in advance of the polls closing and just not pushing the total button until the polls are closed. Well, other counties are under the legal opinion that they're not allowed to do that. Is that a gray area in the law, or is it clear what counties can and can't do there?
That is an issue that has also come up, and it's one of the items that is on our list. But we want to be careful that we don't want to have any chance of results being released before the polls close. That's why we're very careful that we don't release any election night results until 8 p.m. Central Time, because we have to wait for Mountain Time to close. But we also have to look at, you know, we've kind of leveled off over the past couple of general elections where around 30% of the registered of the voter turnout has been absentee. So when you look at Minnehaha, Pennington, Lincoln, Davison County, your bigger counties, they're looking at tens of thousands of ballots that they have to go through and open them, open the envelopes. We have coffee stains. We have really crumpled up ballots and all those types of things where we then have a resolution board that has to recreate that ballot because we obviously can't count a ballot that's covered in coffee stains. But it's making sure we have enough time to get that process done so that hopefully we can announce results before midnight and get through that process as quickly as we can.
And just to provide some context here, in Minnehaha County, they've waited to count, to look at absentee ballots until after polls close. And I think even last general election, I think, was a case where things didn't get done until the wee hours of the morning. Even after the traditional laggards in Shannon County, you have to drive their stuff over to Fall River in order to count them. So,
yes, we had during the general election in 12, it was, I think, right around 4 a.m. when I left the Capitol that we were 100% reported. We've definitely made that a point over the last year and a half that we don't want to wait that long. This election, things went very quickly. We were 100% reported right around 11:30. Now, granted, we only had the 20% turnout where for the general, you know, it'll probably be in the 60 to 70% range. So many, many more ballots. But it is. It's important. We have a lot of resources. The counties have great staffs in putting together their counting procedures and making sure they have all their absentee ballots ready. That we want to do everything we can to get the final results as quickly as possible. But we also want to make sure that we're not going to have a slip up where some results are going to be announced before the 8 p.m. deadline.
Okay. I want to thank you for taking the time and coming in and explaining the process today. I appreciate it.
Absolutely. Great to be here.
Secretary of State Jason Gant in the studio with me, and David Montgomery, a political reporter with the Sioux Falls Argus Leader. Thanks for joining in today as well, David.
Glad to be here.